everybody. My name is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. And I apologize if I have a lot of energy tonight. We just came from a very long, exciting weekend that I'll tell you about a little bit later. But I'm still on that high, and so I apologize if I ramble on or go a little fast. But I'm definitely grateful to be here, and thank you, Billy, for asking me to come out here. It definitely is an honor and privilege anytime to be asked to participate in a meeting like this in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been obviously thinking about a few things the past couple days, and one of them, even on the drive here, was that it's amazing. Me standing in front of you and talking to you like this is a huge feat, because when I got here, probably, I think I had like 8 or 9 months, I was asked to speak sort of similar to this for a celebration for a friend, and I literally could not go to work that day. I made myself violently ill. It was difficult for me to go to the dinner, and progressively, each time as I get asked to participate like this, it gets so much better, and I literally just got nervous right before I was introduced, and that's amazing. That is truly amazing, because I get so wrapped up in myself and so involved in you know, what I'm going to sound like and what I'm going to look like and all this stuff that, you know, I forget about what it's all about. And as soon as you get up here, like, every time this calm comes over me, and this is where I'm supposed to be, and this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and this is what people did for me. It's, you know, the moment I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, people were sharing their stories with me and their, you know, and their experience with me, and you know, that's why I'm here today. So from the beginning, I grew up in a very loving home. A very, very, very loving home, and I actually got to see my parents for like 5 minutes this weekend, but someone that I sponsored, Jill, was with me this weekend, and, you know, she was very gracious and let me kind of have little, my parents were in town to visit my brother. He's in law school at UVA, and I had a fall assembly that was going on this weekend, too, and so we got to have, like, on the way there, we got to stop and say hi, and on the way back, we got to stop and say hi, and my parents are just, you know, wonderful people that really tried to instill in my brother and sister and I morals and values, and really took the time with us to try to show us how to live in a principled manner and by example, because that's the way they live. And my brother and sister, they did very well with that. They caught on very quickly, and they did very well with that. But looking back, and all of this that I'm going to say tonight is upon reflection once I got sober. I never paid attention to any of this until I got sober, and or noticed any of this or was aware of any of this. And so, you know, looking back now, I mean, from a very, very, very early age, I learned to lie and to cheat and to manipulate and to steal, because it was unacceptable to me to not get what I wanted, you know, or the whole any idea of not being happy or you know, wanting the next thing, just extremely insatiable. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people relate, and so from it was very natural. All that lying was very natural to me, and I did it for a very long time. And today, I understand. You know, no wonder I felt an anxious apartness. I mean, when people describe that in the rooms, like, that is, I get that, and I didn't understand that until I got here or had ever heard anybody describe that feeling, that I could not tell the therapists and the counselors and the whomever I was talking to help me along the way, and there are plenty, could never explain to them this anxious apartness. And and so, looking back, from a very young age, I really felt that around people, and I know why now today, and I know why I feel that way today. And fortunately, from being here, there is ways to live differently, and I just really never had the tools before until I got here. And so I had this loving family, and they really tried to provide for me anything and everything. So there's nothing on the outside. Nothing on the outside. This is all inside of me. And I started drinking probably, it's actually fuzzy, and it depends, what I feel like, though. It's like, I had my first drink when I was in around 8th or 9th grade, but it's really the end of my sophomore year, beginning of junior year of high school, that I believe it was my first drunk. And from then on, for real, it was like instantaneous. From then on, anything and everything that was important to me at that time in my life was thrown out the window. I played sports because everybody else played sports, and if everybody else is going to play sports, I didn't want to be left out, you know. I did well in school because I was fearful of going home and not, you know, having the grades that I should have, and a lot of potential. And you know, in relationships, any family relationships or friends, things like that, anybody who wasn't, looking back, anybody who didn't want to drink like I wanted to drink, they were gone very quickly. And I'm actually starting through, like, you know, social networking sites that we have today, actually starting to reconnect with people that, you know, that I was really actually good friends with my 8th grade, freshman year, sophomore year of high school, people that were, I mean, this is like a big transition going from 8th grade to high school, and those are the people that we all helped each other get through that, and then I was like, bye-bye, see ya, I got better things to do, and I've got more popular people to hang out with, and I was getting into, like, the in crowd, and it was because I really started to party, and I mean, alcohol works wonders for me. It's like, it is truly like magical. I felt like Jill and I were talking about it on the way here. I was like, I love drinking. I mean, it was like the highlight of my life, even when it was really bad. I relate to the doctor's opinion, you know, I relate to, you know, I drink because of the effect produced by alcohol, and I believe that, like, what happens to me does not happen to my brother and sister and to my parents, and it makes sense to me that, of course, like, this did so much for me that it calmed me down so that I could be around the rest of you, and I didn't care. That's what happened. I really didn't care once I started drinking. I'm around you. I really didn't care what you thought about me. I didn't care about really what I was saying. In fact, I sounded great, and I was actually usually real, like, so intelligent, I just blew you away. And to talk to people that I never would have talked to in a room and in a party, you know. And I was always, now, I was this weird, how do I explain it? It was kind of fake. It wasn't kind of fake. It was very fake. I put on this front that I was a very confident person. I didn't make a whole lot of sense usually when I was talking to you because I was so nervous, but I was able to project a very confident person, but really around you it was unbearable, and couldn't wait to get out of whatever conversation I was in or whatever, you know. But when I was drinking, I was fine anywhere I was good to go. And I was a drinker who from the get-go was like, even the prospect of the anticipation of the drink coming, like, I'm planning, it's Tuesday, you know, I'm in high school, the access is a little limited, you know, it's Tuesday, but I know I'm going to drink on Friday. Even that anticipation, even of the day on that Friday, could carry me through the day. And then as, you know, that little window got smaller and smaller, then it was like, okay, if I just make it through the day, then by 2 o'clock, I will be able to bolt out of work and go drink. You know, even that stuff can carry me through. And maybe today, you know, I understand it a little bit more towards the end of my drinking is white knuckling it. But, even that, like, could carry me through, like I said. And, I literally, for my junior year, everything revolved around alcohol. Everything. My friends then did. School was really not happening as much as it should have. But the next party, it was like constant planning of the next party, plotting and planning. If I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. And that's absolutely, and I didn't know, I'm not kidding, I had no idea that the rest of you, well, not you, the rest of them weren't thinking that way. I had no clue. I thought that everybody was, I mean, how do you get through the day, people? Like, we need some help. So I had no idea. And, but obviously, when you lead your life, I was not, I talk about this a lot. Like, when I came into the rooms, I could try to compare out a lot. Like, I didn't get a divorce. I didn't lose my house. Yet, it was not a house I owned, but the apartment was, you know, I was unable almost to pay rent at the end, and I was about to lose a job, but I hadn't lost that job yet. But really, for me, I had no ability through my whole drink to really accumulate anything. I was a good starter, but, you know, my drinking really looks like senior year. all of a sudden I woke up and realized that everybody is going away to college. Everybody. All my friends. Even the friends that I'm like, what are you? They don't do anything either. Like, what? So they're going away to college, and I decide, you know, these are these little glimpses, and that's what kind of propels me forward, is these little glimpses that, oh my, no, no, you can't leave me behind. I'm not going to be left behind. And, you know, it starts like another little journey. And I really believed, like my junior or senior year of high school, I really believed that, okay, I need to go to college. This is the next step you do. And somehow, I technically got into college. It was more like a non-degree basis. They sent me away to college. My parents let me go to college. But I hadn't really finished high school yet because I was shy a few credits because of attendance. So they let me, the school let me finish college, or high school in college. It was a little strange. But I really believe, like, this is it, Mom and Dad. This is it. I am going to start over. These people in high school, they are, you know, they create a lot of problems for me. And I think if I get away from everybody and I go away to school, we're going to get our acts together. And I really, I mean, I'm sure a lot of you relate. Like, I really believe that inside me. Like, I honestly, I did not have any intentions of going out there and reproducing the same exact scene that I had just come from. Now, where I chose to go to school is a little different in the light of what we were dealing with. But I decided that I really liked this healthcare administration program at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And when you've been lying and manipulating for a pretty long time now, and your poor parents just, you know, they just want to do whatever, you know. They love me. If this is what I thought, you know, that I was so convincing because I believed it myself, that if this is what I thought was going to do it, and, like, I had this whole plan, and we rolled with it, and I went out to UNLV, and here's what happened there. Actually, something very different. I went out to UNLV, and I had very limited access to alcohol, and I don't know why I didn't. I was very scared of people once I got there. It was very difficult for me already at that time, unless I was with, like, a group of friends, to go anywhere by myself. And I didn't know that until I got out there, and my mom left. I came back home, and then it was just me and by myself in this campus. And this particular school is a lot of commuters from the area, a lot of people from California and Hawaii, and a lot of people that knew each other already. And they kind of, if you didn't want to be in the Greek life there, which I had no interest in at all, then you're kind of like left on the outskirts. And to be quite frank, by that time, without alcohol in my system, restlessness, irritability, discontent, that was pretty mildly, like, I'm sorry, I was very difficult to be around, you know? I was crabby, to put it in a nice way without, crabby, very intensely crabby. And so it was difficult for me to make friends, and thus, I didn't have a whole lot of access to alcohol, but I would drive every weekend to Arizona where all my friends from high school had gone to school. They went to Arizona State, Northern Arizona, U of A, all that stuff. And so I would drive every weekend, and I would sort of white-knuckle it through the week. But here's what would happen there, and this is like a clear picture to today. This is very useful for me today to look back, and this is what happens when I don't have alcohol at that point to kind of get me through the days. Because at that point, I was drinking every day, absolutely every day, and sometimes in the morning, but by the time that I left Michigan where I was living, I was drinking every day. And I went out there and I wasn't hardly drinking at all. And I could barely leave my apartment. I would drive to school. I would go into the parking lot. I would sit there, have a little talk with myself, really believe I was going to get out of the car. And all of a sudden, before I know it, the car is turned around and back out the park. So I'm not failing out of school because I'm drinking too much and not showing up for class like that. I'm failing out of school because I can't even go into the classroom and be with the rest of you, right? I could barely go to the grocery store and would make myself so crazy that I, like, fainted in the grocery store one time. Like, yeah, just, yeah, like a bit. So insane. I was insane. That's what was happening. I was insane. And when you're insane like that, like, I'm a runner. I enjoy running. I enjoy exercise. I could not leave my apartment to go running. And so during one of my late nights of just staying up all night because I couldn't sleep either, I decided to purchase a little apparatus from the internet, or not from the internet, I guess that was the phone then, from an infomercial. And it was a home gym that attaches to your door, and you literally put on a little harness, and then you're suspended from the door, and I would just run in place all day long. Like, and that was the only way that I would get any exercise or do anything, but just let myself suspend from the door and run. And I'm surprised that I didn't kill myself, like, you know, detach from the door and go flying across the apartment and seriously injure myself. But that's my life. And by the way, nobody knew this was happening, you know? No one had any clue. And I didn't really think it was that weird. Like, I'm like, that's, you know, I just need me time, you know? I didn't really think that, I mean, I thought that it was weird that I couldn't go to class, you know, but I could not put any of that, never forget. No, it was like over here and this was over here. And I would drive every weekend to Arizona, and that was the only way that it could get me through the day, is really without killing myself, to be quite honest. And towards that's a little bit of the theme. There would be these moments throughout, you know, the years that seemed like a viable solution to however I was feeling at the time, because things would get so dark and nasty that I really just thought that I just didn't want to live anymore. And so eventually, I always say this, but like as any good alcoholic, I moved to where the party was because I needed to have a real college life, is what I told my parents. I had already gotten I had gotten through some classes at the school, and I was doing a little bit better. That's because I actually started drinking at school. Finally found some friends, and I started drinking, and I actually started showing up for class. Drunk, maybe sometimes, but I was there. And but then I moved to Arizona. And really had good intentions. I really thought that, again, I needed to be around my friends. That was the excuse then. I really needed to be around my friends at that time. And so I moved to Arizona, and things got really bad. It was pretty much a 2-year vacation, my parents call it. I didn't really go to school there. I was just there. And I just drank, and I started doing drugs there. And drugs are not a huge part of my story. They're there. They're usually there to prolong the party. And if they were there and, you know, everyone else is doing it, I was like, that was my kind of thing. And I got a little too much into cocaine, but that's okay. The alcohol was the life, you know? And I was thinking about this today because when my parents called me this morning to go meet them for brunch, my mom said, well, meet us at the Horse and Hound. And I was like, stopped for a moment. I was like, oh, okay. And I got off the phone. Because there's also a Horse and Hound in Arizona. And beautiful Tempe, where everybody it's beautiful there. The weather is gorgeous there. And most of the time, people are outside at the pool. You know, I was like 20 years old, 21 years old. People are outside at the pool. They're partying. They're outside. They're hanging. Barbecues. Lots of barbecues. I, on the other hand, was seriously dressed like this. I mean, I would get myself all dressed up. And I would go down to the Horse and Hound, a.k.a. the Pooch and Pony, and I would be inside while everyone's outside, you know, off-track betting and drinking all day long with, you know, my parents' money, and it was, I did not see a problem at all with this. And I got my first DUI there, and I didn't even see a problem with that. And actually, my parents didn't really see a big problem with it. They thought it was sort of a phase thing. And because they really got into their head just like I did. There's something else wrong with me. It's, okay, yeah, you party a little too much. But there's something else over here that's wrong with you, you know. And there was a lot of doctors from early on, and there was a lot of therapists and counselors and police officers and some judges, and they're sprinkled in there too. And everybody's trying to help and trying to figure Elise out, and I'm trying to figure myself out. And but alcohol was sort of always on the side. Nobody really... And the truth is, I'm sure like a lot of people, I didn't tell people all of what was happening. Not one person knew really the extent of the drinking. A lot of times it was people knew things because of breakdowns that I had. Because either I was going to get in trouble or someone caught me doing something, you know, whatever it may be. And so I got my first DUI here. And here's another, this is a glimpse for me, being sober, looking back now. Here is probably the first time, what happened was I got my DUI probably 2, 3 in the morning, right? And then everyone bailed me out, and I got back to the house, and during that day I said, I'm going to stop drinking for a little bit. Nah, just take a little break. We're not stopping altogether, because that's ridiculous. And I didn't know anybody who was stopping drinking or anything like that, and... I said, I'm just not going to drink for just, like, a little while. And that was probably meant, like, a week or two or something like that. But what happened for me was, is that by probably 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, someone just said, let's play a board game. Yahtzee, actually. And I said, that seems totally reasonable. Why not? It's a board game. And they were drinking beer playing board game. And I thought, I'll have one beer. Which is very rare, because I'm not one of those people. I'm not like, I'm going to go out for a drink or a cocktail. Like, this is like, we're going out. We're going to do this up. I'm spending money. We're going to do this. And so I had one beer, right? And then I don't remember this at night. I mean, I blacked out. And when people started explaining to me, you know, the physical allergy that we have, and phenomenon of craving, that's the first glimpse for me that I can look back and say that made sense, and that, you know, that peculiar mental twist. I mean, I had a lot of things. I mean, I was failing again out of school at that time. I had disappointment. Though my parents were like, don't worry about it, we'll kind of fix this, they still were, nonetheless, they're disappointed in me. I mean, this is not good for, it's not a, good on my scorecard. And I was, you know, losing a lot of money, and things were not good at that time. I had every reason not to drink that specifically that evening, let alone for a little, you know, for a little while. And I couldn't do it. And you know, those resolutions, it never works for me. And you know, my whole life is sort of once I started drinking, is sort of this whole game of, I get in trouble, or I realize that people are moving forward and I'm staying behind, and I want to clean my act up. And it's a whole series of cleaning my act up, and the same thing happening again. The same exact thing. And in fact, getting worse. And, you know, from Arizona, I moved to D.C. because that's where my parents were. And I felt like if I was closer to my parents, maybe I would act better? I don't know what I was thinking. Feel better? I don't know. And I moved back to... I moved here to D.C. where they had moved once I left for college. And, you know, what do you think happened? You know? I found the same people, you know. I started going to bars, and I just, you know, fell into the same pattern. And it just kept, you know, it was just worse. And by that time, we're losing jobs. Now we're losing jobs. And then, you know, eventually we'll have another DUI. And at that time, my parents were kind of like, okay. Because those are the only people, by the way, that are close to me. Nobody else, even boyfriends that I would date, everybody stays out here, you know. Just let me do what I'm going to do. Fine. You'll be fine. And I'll pop in and be in part of your life when I feel like it. And I got another DUI, and they were like, okay, now you got to really start to look at stuff. And I didn't. I still refused to. I still felt like, if I get the right boyfriend, you know, and so I got the right boyfriend, you know, I picked me up a nice police officer, he's going to be a DEA agent, you know, I was like, this person's gonna put me on the straight and narrow, I feel good about this one, you know, and what do you got me doing, you know, he's my boyfriend, and I'm in, you know, Michigan doing lines of cocaine while he's a DEA agent, you know, visiting friends and, you know, drinking my life, but, you know, it's like, okay. That's not going to work either. None of that stuff works for me. And so I can't, you know, once I'm back here and we've got all that, we've had the boyfriend and everything, finally, guys, you know, it starts to, I mean, because nothing, no consequence at that time, truly, no consequence outweighed what I was getting from alcohol. Nothing. It clearly didn't. And, but I was starting, I was pretty much, like, dead on the inside. I was incapable of loving anyone or caring about anyone or having any awareness, where Jill and I are talking about that a lot this weekend, of anybody else, you know, of anybody's cares or suffering or anything. It was about how I felt and how you need to, how, you know, it's how you actually need to act to make me feel better usually, or not to upset me, or, you know, and it just became, it was a big, big nightmare. And by the end of it, I was living in a one-bedroom apartment in Arlington. And my mom is wanting to fire me for, like, probably the fifth time, my mom. I'm finally not going to be able to pay rent this upcoming month. My apartment looks like, I would come out of my apartment dressed like this, sort of. I thought I looked good, but I'm not quite sure, looking back now. But I would try. I would try to come out all, like, nice and fancy, and really, if you, no one had been to my apartment in, like, 6 months, and I was living in absolute filth. It was disgusting. There was vomit and urine everywhere, and cigarette butts, and every place you could possibly think of, and wine bottles and beer bottles, and I hadn't been able to get into my bedroom in probably since I lived there. Like, I slept on the couch. It was just like, it was not pretty. It was not pretty. No one would want really anyone to be living there. And but you know, more importantly is that I felt like at that time there was no other option but to kill myself. I really believed that. And I felt like all the rest of you would be so much better off if I wasn't here anymore, because I was dead. We were dead in the inside, and there was nothing really to live for. And that, to, for me today, is such a clear sign to me of how warped my perception is, that I would think that that would be a solution to how I was feeling. Like, that was all I could see, was that that was the viable option here. And so I did. I tried to kill myself. I took a lot of Xanax. I'm not quite sure how much. I had been out all day drinking for my friend's birthday, and I had come home, and my head was loud, you know, like it is loud, you know, like it normally is, but it just wouldn't shut up that day. And some of my friends say, you know, that alcohol stopped working for them. I'm not sure it did. It was working the day before, you know, I was fine, but that day, it wasn't doing it for me. And the problem was I didn't have any. I'd run out, I just didn't, and I wasn't, I don't, as one of my friends said one time when we were in a group of people and we were discussing, because after my second DUI, I didn't drive. I don't know why I didn't drive anymore, but I decided, you know, like, I wouldn't drive when I was drinking. But my friend was explaining to someone who had said, why don't you drive that night, Elise? My best friend Shannon said, oh, well, Elise doesn't drive at night. Not Elise doesn't drive when she's drinking, but I don't drive at night, because every night I'm drinking. I'm not drinking when I'm I don't drive when I drink now, so therefore every night, Elise doesn't drive at night. And I was like, oh, that's great. That's great. So I decided to kill myself, and obviously it didn't work. And so that next morning, and I'm not sure, I don't think about it a whole lot except for me personally, it's great. Because I don't know why, you know, I tried to kill myself before, and it didn't work before. I don't know how seriously I was attempting it. This time was pretty, I was not expecting to wake up the next morning. And, but I asked for help. Like, sincere, genuine help. Like, I can't do this anymore. My drinking is out of control, and I can't stop drinking. And, I asked for help, and within a day or two, I finally got myself, my mom came with me because I couldn't go by myself. I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is where it gets great. I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people were talking about alcoholism. And I am somebody, which is not everyone's experience, so this is just mine. I have been here since my first meeting, and my sobriety date is December 4th of 2006. I sat at my first meeting, people were talking about alcoholism. They literally were talking about alcohol. I mean, they were talking, I had no idea what alcoholism was. I thought I was kind of maybe an alcoholic, because I kind of had that feeling. But I had no idea what alcoholism was. I didn't have the slightest clue. And I had been in plenty of alcohol. I mean, after a couple DUIs, you've gone through a few classes, if you will. But I never went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I would lie and forge the slips and make things up. And so I never actually went to a meeting. And when I went to that first meeting, they were talking about phenomenon of craving. And I was like, I looked at my mom, and I was like, and she was like, my poor mother, she's not an alcoholic. And she's just like, and looking at me I really believe I was grace, because I could hear what he was saying. This guy that now actually, you know, I know very well, but this guy who is nothing like me in any way is talking about me. And he was talking about, you know, the wording in the doctor's opinion about it, irritability, restlessness, and discontent. I mean, he was talking about an obsession of the mind, and all in that meeting, and I remember it. I don't remember what step he was talking about. I don't think it was the first step. I'm pretty sure it was, like, later on. So I have no idea. But I do absolutely remember those things. And what happened for me was, as soon as that meeting was over, a group of women surrounded me, which a lot of you know in this room, a group of amazing, amazing women. I can't believe it sometimes. Right? Phil and I were talking about this. I can't believe it sometimes. Because these women are so active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say it all the time, but I'm the type of person that I feed off of the people that I'm around. And if people aren't doing anything, there's a very, very low percentage that I'm actually going to do anything, you know? And these women are, like, in the middle, active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they literally scooped me up, and they carried me along. And, you know, I didn't need to go to a detox or a rehab or whatever, but this is the deal. I literally was with them all the time. If I wasn't attempting to sleep or, like, around my mom, I was with them all the time. And I started doing almost immediately anything. I was like, please, anything, because I was so scared to drink. I didn't want to drink. And I started going to meetings every day. Every day. I still go to meetings most every day. I've returned to school now, so one day I don't go, but we'll get to that later. But so they scooped me up, and I jumped in. I was like, please, just somebody, I need help. And what happened for me is I started working the steps. And this is where if you don't get anything from this, is that, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it so very, very much. Like, not only saved my life, but, like, it's totally different today. It really is. Even on horrible days, right? Bad days of stuff usually that I've done. Nothing has happened in sobriety that is traumatic or horrible happened to me, you know, or anybody, loved ones in my life. But it's more things that I've done, situations I've put myself in. But it's nothing. It's nothing compares. And so I started working the steps. And that's really what's, changed my life. Not only, of course, like, sponsorship, huge, huge. And I started working with sponsor almost immediately. And because for me, I really believe that, like, I have such distorted perception in my life. I have such, you know, basically for me is that I have such disproportionate reactions to what actually is going on at the time in my life, that I need, like, a tremendous amount of help to learn to either respond, right, instead of, like, exploding into everything, or to somebody else to give me a broader picture. Because that's where it gets me. My perception is, you know, attempting to kill myself. You know, that's where that gets me, because life is right here, and I don't see any of this out here, and I need someone to open that up for me. And that's what, you know, in the beginning, like, it was my sponsor. She started to give me other little windows to look through. And, the home group, we do ladder riding. You know, this is not everybody's experience, but I will definitely share with you mine. I did a little bit of riding for my first step. And, I am powerless over alcohol, absolutely. And, but the struggle is, at times, is the unmanageability, right? And because for me, things got, they really did. When you go from, like, wanting to die, and then, trying to die, and then all of a sudden you have all these new friends, and you know, for the first time in my life, like, the feeling that I had was, I know what the hell is wrong with me. Like, that was it. I know what's wrong with me. I get it. Like, this, I'm an alcoholic. Like, that's how I was. I was that annoying person. Like, oh, my God, that's me. And so when you go from that to this, you know, it's, things start to get better very quickly. And, you know, of course outside things get better for us, you know, like I start acting better, I start showing up where I'm supposed to be, I can hold jobs, you know, we get better jobs, we get cars, we get homes, we get, you know, all kinds of stuff we get. And it's very easy for me to get caught up in all that, or stuff that I don't have, you know, what I'm missing. But that's, for me today, that's not, and pretty quickly on, it was sort of saying to me, like, my unmanageability resides in my poor reactions to life, you know, and those will always be there if I don't have the rest of the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's just how I relate to people, and they're like, I didn't get a manual when I stepped into life. Like, I do not know how to live on my own. I did not know how to live. Whatever I was doing before was not working. We have major problems. So when I hold that close to me, which is very evident on a daily basis when I am not doing certain things here, those poor reactions, there's more of them today, or there's less of them today, but there's, you know, it goes back to more. And so, you know, I started pretty quickly for me, the obsession lifted itself. But I really think I was so distracted by what everybody's having me do here that I just didn't, all of a sudden one day I was like, I haven't even thought about alcohol. So I didn't have major compulsions when I was new, newer. But here's what happened. I started to do what you guys were doing, right? So I came to believe that whatever you guys were doing, right, was working for you and you weren't drinking. And in fact, you weren't. It's not just that you weren't drinking, but that you seemed reasonably happy to me, which I didn't feel that way when I came in. And so I came to believe in the process here, really. And through that process, what happened for me was I came to believe in a higher power, right? And for me, that's God, and I'll say that quite a lot because it's just, you know, that's not everybody's, but I call it God. I came to believe in a God of my own understanding, for real. Like, I had God over here, but I never really used God, and I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know how to do anything when I got here with regards to that. And immediately people, I ask a lot of questions, and if you're new, ask a lot of questions, you know, like, just follow people around, because what happened is I went on my first retreat, right, 2 months sober, and I didn't tell anybody that I didn't know how to pray, because I don't like to look bad. And, you know, my friend Lindsay was in a room with me at the retreat, and she got on her knees, and I felt comfortable and safe with her, and I asked her if she would show me how to pray on my knees. And, you know, and she's like, she's someone who the first time, like, said so cheerfully hi to, like, the parking attendant in the parking garage, and I was like, oh, that's so nice. Like, you're so nice. And she's like, what do you mean? Like, she's a human being. And, I'm, you know, like, these people, like, open me up, because I'm, like, in my little small evil world. And so Lindsay, you know, she started to teach me things, and this is not my sponsor, you know, this is my friend. And I learned to pray here, and little by little I started to forge a relationship with a God in my life. And my experience is that I started to say yes to anything and everything, no matter how scared I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter how scared I was of you or going to try something new or do something different. I said yes, and I did it anyways, you know. And I started to have a third step in my life, and I started to ask people, instead of making decisions on my own, I really started to ask input. And by that process, I start to form relationships with all of you, right? And, you know, and then, you know, I started to form relationships, and I'll get to it in a little bit, but, like, you know, that's the thing, that's the woo for me. Like, you know, when I am off by myself alone, it's very difficult for me to have a relationship with God in my life. It really is, because I need a lot of help, and I need a lot of your input and your guidance and your experience to tell me that, you know, I've been through this, I've felt this way, I've done whatever, because otherwise I get very dark and very, very small world that I make for myself, and difficult for God to get in there. And so I need relationships with you. And so what happened was that I did a four-step. And no lie, I really said to people in the car ride, and it may have been actually to come to this meeting when someone was speaking one time, that I really believed that I was a nice girl who drank too much. Those words literally came out of my mouth. And if anybody knows me, it's so, so, and I just described me to you, you know, like, well, that's so delusional, like, why would I ever think that? and it's very clear after writing the fourth step that that is not the case, right? But here's what I learned. I learned that no matter how you treated me, right, if you treated me with the most love in the world, like my parents, you know, and close friends, or you were the biggest mean person ever, and you did, you know, which, by the way, there wasn't really a whole lot on there. That was mostly me. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter how you treated me, because if you fit into certain little relationships in my life, I treated you the same exact way. Same exact way. In fact, share every time I talk about the fourth step. But I seriously asked my sponsor if I could do it on the computer and cut and paste it, because it was the same thing, and the same thing, and the same thing, and the same thing. And, you know, and for different really, like, you know, friends I treated one way, boyfriends I treated another way. I mean, all underlying under there is, like, you know, the self-centered fear. Absolutely. You know, either not getting what I want or losing something that I had, all that. That's all under there, you know. And the lying and the cheating, the manipulating that I did in order to kind of attempt to finagle whatever I thought I needed in my life and or wanted, whatever it was at the time. But So I saw, you know, very clearly, by the time you're right, I mean, you all know, like, if you've gone through a course, so by the time you're done writing all that over and over again, I was not confused about what parts that I played in my relationship. I was not someone who struggled necessarily. Once I saw it, I was like, holy moly. And that's from the fourth and fifth step, really, you know, after, you know, you share it, when I shared it with my sponsor, you know, the main thing for me was, it wasn't like there was this burn, you know, there wasn't some big thing that happened, you know. In fact, I kind of felt a little crappy afterwards, you know, like telling everybody all, you know, telling my sponsor all this stuff. And, but really what happened for me was, there was a freedom, because now I see what we're working with. And I really did feel that. I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, I did my fifth step, and I didn't think that I could be honest with somebody, fully honest. And there's nothing on there, people, that it's boring, it's, like, there's nothing on there that I should, it's whatever, you know. But, you know, I told her everything. I really told her everything. And when I was done, I really felt like, and I love it when people talk about that, I really felt I could sit deeper in my seat. Absolutely. Because I hadn't told anyone in my entire life the whole story. Everybody got little bits and pieces. I think I mentioned it before. But nobody knew the real me. And this person finally knew the real me. And there is, like, there's a relief that comes from that. And the biggest thing that came out of that whole process was she did not judge me, right? And she, in fact, told me stories that would obviously make me feel a little bit better. You know, she'd been through some similar things, and, you know, a lot of you probably had that experience. And what happened for me was, this is the biggest thing that came throughout that whole process was, is when I started sharing with you, the rest of you, because she didn't judge me, I felt comfortable to start telling people things that I'd never thought that I would tell anybody else in my entire life. But I started to share with the rest of you, me, and I never shared me with any of you. And so I started, these relationships started to get stronger and stronger. And, you know, and then I moved, you know, I have had to the steps are obviously, for me, a continual process. That's my experience. But I glazed a little over 6 and 7, and, you know, we read it and looked at it a little bit. But I had to return to it in more depth in the past year and a half, especially. And I'm really in a different spot, actually, with even the seven steps today than I was like a year and a half ago. I really started to want to change. Well, number one, I thought that when you did the fourth and fifth step that, okay, great. We see me. There you go. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm good. I'm going to act better. I'm not going to lie or do any of that stuff anymore. We see where that gets me. And obviously, most of you will probably know that none of that changed. You know, that's continuous hard work that in order for me not to live that way. And so what happened was this, I started to not want to act that way anymore, really, right? And it went from, I didn't want to act that way because I actually didn't want to look bad. You know, that's the initial, because now people see it and now it's out in the open and I don't want to look, but then it changed, you know, today, I genuinely do not want to treat people poorly in my life. It doesn't mean that I don't. But I try to put, on most days, my best foot forward. But it takes a lot of, actually, the rest of the steps are a huge, for 10, 11, and 12 are a huge part of helping me to act better than I feel today. And we jumped into the eighth and ninth step, right? I started into ninth step amends, and You know, this is why today, like, you know, leaving my family and only get, you know, my parents live in Savannah now. My sister doesn't live near us anymore. My brother lives away, you know. But look, like, I want to be around my family. Like, I miss them. Like, I saw them for, like, just a little bit, but I genuinely miss them today. Not because they make me feel better when I see them. I'm fine. Like, I have my sponsor and my friends, and I don't need to dump anything on them anymore, and I don't need, they get to be, they just get to be my parents that get to see me living my life today. You know, they get to enjoy from that view instead of cleaning it up anymore. And those were the first people that I really, like, after my initial, you know, I had a friend that I made amends with, but I started, making amends with my family and my parents. And the biggest thing for me for amends, it's changing a little bit today, but the biggest thing initially was, is that I was shocked by, they didn't judge me. Like, they weren't judging me for being sick. They just wanted me, and that's how I treated them. I treated you guys, like I treated my parents and my brother and sister and people close to me, as if I treated them as this, oh, I always get jumbled up, but the way, what I'm thinking is that I treat them as if I, the way that I think they're judging me for my actions that I'm taking, right? And it really blocked me off from them for a long time. And, it's not that way today. Like, I genuinely know that my parents, all they wanted, and my brother and sister, all they wanted was me to get better. That's all. They didn't want me to die. They just wanted me to get better and to live a life. And, like, I get to do that today. And they actually get to see that. And I got the opportunity to, my sister asked me to be the maid of honor in her wedding. And, it was, like, it was a incredible experience on so many levels. But, got an email right before her wedding was in this April, and I got an email right before, and it said, it was from my mom, and I wish I, sometimes I'll read it, but I don't have it with me, but, because it was the nicest thing ever, but it's so Alcoholics Anonymous, it's absurd, it is like, I can't do this, this is not me, and she wrote me an email that said, you know, that she was really proud of me, because we had just had some weekend where it was like, I was just in the background. I was just there to help and to be whatever positive light I could be that weekend. Not one part of that weekend ever became about me, which is so rare. You know, there is so rare, especially something like that. So, she sent me an email that was like, you know, she was so proud of me and which me, I know is not me. She was so proud of me and, that she really treasured essentially that she could come, because through that whole process was stressful on her, and she really didn't go to anybody except for me with stuff. And I just got to be an ear. I didn't need to be a gossip. I didn't need to put my input in. I just needed to be an ear for my mom. And that, you know, she couldn't believe, like, how much today, she said she used to shelter me before, right? They didn't want to ever tell me anything because they didn't want to upset me. But today, it's completely different. That she comes to me for things. My dad comes to me for things. My brother and sister come to me for things. And it's like, I'm not this little thing in the corner, like poor Elise, or like, you know, what a mess, or, you know, it's like, I get to show up for my family today, and I get to participate in their lives. And that wedding was like, I mean, I can't even tell you, like, it was the most amazing thing. And I don't really even like weddings so much. It sounds so horrible. But it's just like a big, a lot of stuff going on. And there were so many moments that I took away that were just treasures. But that is so not me. Like, when I started feeling, like, stressed out or whatever, like, I got to leave the room and I got to call one of you guys. Take me out of whatever was going on or whatever spiral I was about to, like, go into. Like, I didn't have to indulge in any of that, you know? I got to, like, I mean, there are moments, like, I look back and my dad's handicapped and I don't know if he'll be walking very much longer. And I don't dance. I don't like to dance. I'm one of those people, and, you know, it was, I was like, I'm not dancing at the wedding, I'm not going to do it, you know, like, in my head, I have this list, but the dancing came, and my dad asked me to dance, and in my head, instantly, my head is like, oh, we could do that, and then cut in my sponsor, almost instantly, cut in my sponsor of, you just say yes. And I just said yes. In that moment, I know for the rest of my life, it was like one of the most, it was so, there was nobody but him and me. No one will ever be able to take that away from me. Nothing that happens. Nothing. And those are moments that I get to see today that I would never have paid attention to before. Sorry, I think I'm tired this weekend. I'm just so, like, emotional about this stuff. But, oh, thank you. But no one will ever be able to take that away from me. And so what happens is, though, and I'll wrap this up very soon, but part of this whole process of being able to show up for all this stuff for them is, big time, is my 10th and 11th step, actually. And my sponsor, thank God, she's an amazing example of Alcoholics Anonymous. Absolutely. She does the, you know, and I believe her, and when she tells me that things are going to work, like, I believe her today, and even though sometimes I may be stomping my feet, which I had a recent little episode of, I still believe that what she said, because she does it, and I watch her, and, you know, so she holds me accountable to the 10th, 11th step, and it has transformed my life, because I was so, you know, 4-step, obviously, and 5th step gave me a little bit of a foundation, right, to take a look at myself, but today, my natural inclination is to look at the rest of you and what you're doing and how you're affecting me and how you're making me feel for me. And today, and it actually goes the opposite. Today, when I have 11th step in my life, when I am, you know, praying on a regular basis and sitting in the morning, having some, you know, having meditation be practiced be part of my life, slows me down enough to have spot check inventories throughout the day. Take a step back and go, you know, I need some help with this situation. Or there's clearly something, there's something wrong with, this is, my reaction is strong right now. This is, there's something wrong with me. No matter what's going on the outside, the first thing I need to do is quiet this. And a lot of times I need a lot of help with that. You know, I need my sponsor's input, you know, I'll shoot her an email during the day, or, you know, a text message to somebody, or, you know, I'm not running most days today on the idea that I can fix everything that happens in my life. And and you know, obviously the 11th step really gives me the opportunity to you know, continue to have a strong relationship with a God in my life, right? And you know, I'll be honest with you. Recently it has been a little difficult. It has become very aware to me through friction, which my sponsor and I talk about a lot, that we're going to have friction in our lives, you know? We have to have friction in order to move forward. That's a natural occurrence, right? So, of course, things are going to happen. I'm going to act out. I'm going to do, you know, whatever. But the key is how I then react to that, you know? I got a little away from a 10th and 11th step practice for myself. And, so much away that when it came time to, like, try to go back into it, it was very, very difficult for me. And what do you think happened? What do you think? The only thing out of all of this, which has been continuous through my whole sobriety because of what you guys teach me, the only thing that, instead of looking in to figure out what's wrong with me, all of us, is to help you. That was hands down. Drop it off. Where's someone I can help? Where's a new person that I can help? Where's my friend that I can help? That always helps me, that always picks up the phone. Practical experience shows, right? You know, intensive work with other alcoholics. Intensive. Not when Elise feels like it. Not when I fix myself. Not when I think it's going to, like, make me feel better. Like, not just do it. You know, and just do it. And that's exactly what happened, is the only reason why I really think that I'm standing here today is because of helping other alcoholics. And that will always be, I mean, if that's always consistent in my life. It really is. I mean, and sometimes I need to be reminded that that's what I need to do in that moment, but that's where it is. That's you guys. You guys are my connection to God most of the time. You guys are my connection, obviously, to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you give me my life today. I mean, without people in Alcoholics Anonymous and without the God in my life, I cannot, not only can I not stay sober, but I can't live life at all. I mean, it's like almost, it's impossible for me. And, And I just came, I'll stop right now in a second, but I just came from the fall assembly, right? Which is a whole different, it's a whole different ball game, but if you ever get interested in area service, you're more than welcome to call me, and like, how, I mean, it's an amazing thing to get involved in. It's just another part of, like, you know, it's crazy, and there's all kinds, you know, I'm sure, I've had a very positive experience with it, and it can be a lot of fun, and really the joy is that I got to bring Jill with me this year, because she's a new GSR, and I sponsored Jill probably for about a year and a half, and this is also the big part, too. I've seen Jill go from, Jill's been in that bay for probably 10 years, go from this very angry person when we first met her to, like, this, like, ray of sunshine that if you talk to anybody in my home group, which is 400 people, they know who Jill is. And they've had this amazing impact. And to watch Alcoholics Anonymous working in other people's lives, like, that's insane. That's crazy. I can't see a lot here, but that's crazy. That's crazy. So we went to the fall assembly, and we had a blast. And, I mean, it's like 11, 12 hours of, like, sitting in business meetings and stuff. And I was with her and watching her get so excited about all of this and excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's so rare. It really is. Like, I mean, it's so rare. And so if you have it, like, I hope you hold on to it because, you know, we've gotten someone else that just walked out the door recently. And it's sad. And she's been around with us for a year. And, you know, it's sad. And not everybody gets this. Not everybody gets to stay. But my job is to give it away, that all the love and patience and tolerance that you guys bestow upon me, and to help, you know, help in any way that I can. That's God's will for me. And I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to come and spend time with you guys tonight, and thanks for listening to me. All right. Thanks for listening.